Well, I wanted to continue with our discussion on time being with Dogan's idea of time, but I wanted to do something a little bit practical with you first, to follow up on what I was saying at the beginning. When we first started sitting, there was this card that came last week. You know, I shared with you Time Magazine's mainstream presentation of mindfulness. And I thought they did a pretty good job. I read you the meditation instructions from Time Magazine. I never thought I'd do that, but I thought they were pretty good. So here was a card, right in that vein, here was a card I got. It said, "I tried meditation." Then you open it up and it says, "I think I was doing it wrong. My meditation was, oh my God, I've got so much to do. I can't believe I'm sitting here wasting time breathing instead of picking up my dry cleaning and making flight plans for next week. And hey, my chest hurts. Maybe I should see a doctor." So does that sound familiar? It does, right? So, oh, I have to find this place now. Where is it? So as I was saying earlier, one of the things that discourages people from meditation practice is we really want to do things well. And when we do meditation, we're constantly reminded that we're not doing it so well. So we think, well, there must be something wrong with me. You know, I can't seem to settle my mind down. What's going on here? I'm not doing it right. I should just give up. Really, sometimes I think that's the main reason people don't pick it up as a main practice. So I thought what I wanted to do, if I can find it here, this is Norman's book again, which we'll return to. 59 aphorisms from the Tibetan tradition, the Lojan teachings, very practical instructions of kind of guiding us through, which is a wonderful adjunct to Zen practice because Zen tends to abide so much in the formless realm. You know, we don't actually say a lot about meditation in Zen. We just say, well, just kind of sit down, keep a straight back, follow your breath, keep your attention down here, and then just spend a lot of time on the cushion and see what you find out about how your mind works and about the nature of reality. So these are very practical kind of instructions, if I can just get to the one I wanted. The reason I liked it was because it really normalizes what I was saying here about here it is. Okay. So this is one of the last. There's 59 aphorisms. This is one of the last ones, which makes sense. It says, make practice your whole life. Make practice your whole life. So not just you sit down. It's not like you go to yoga class. You do yoga, you feel better. You sit down on the cushion. As I said last week, meditation, really what meditation's about, it's about developing character. How do we use this practice, the sitting practice, to actually open our hearts and make us more compassionate and more empathetic? How do we do that? And then all the consequences that flow from that, right speech and right action and right livelihood and right effort, all flow from the insight that we get in meditation practice. So how is that? So one of the aphorisms here is make practice your whole life. So I like this because this is from Norman Fisher, wrote this book, and I think this will normalize some of your own experience in meditation practice. This point is both an effort that we make going forward and a result of what we've already done. People often complain to me that they don't have time for spiritual practice in today's busy world. It seems that we can barely cover the basics, let alone refine our lives further with spirituality. When spiritual practice is an item at the bottom of our list, to-do list, that's why that card kind of spoke to me, which is often happens, right? You sit down and then you think, I've got so much to do. I've got this to do, I've got that to do. And maybe I'll just cut my meditation 5 minutes short today. It's because I really need to make that phone call. So that's why it's really important when you sit, somebody said, make the decision the night before. I'm going to sit for 20 minutes. I'm not going to sit until I feel like not sitting. You can do that after your 20 minutes, but really make a commitment. 10 minutes, 20 minutes, a half an hour. When spiritual practice is an item at the bottom of a long to-do list, which are always these days embedded in task accomplishing apps on our smartphone, it is very hard to get to it, and usually we don't. So you make the decision the night before. You're just going to do it. Every morning you don't get up and say, shall I brush my teeth this morning? I really don't feel like it. It's more that sense. No, this is just something that I'm going to do. My answer to this is simple. Spiritual practice is not an item on the list. It is not a task to do. It is how we do what we do. It's a spirit, an attitude. You are all breathing all day long. It doesn't take any more time to become conscious. Let's say 3 breaths in a row. Your mind is thinking distractively all day long. It doesn't take any more time to intentionally think of a slogan you're working with. In other words, bring a slogan. Take one of these slogans or take one of the precepts. Take one of the paramitas and turn it during the day. Generosity. Generosity. What's it? Can I be more generous right now? Am I being more generous right now? Patience. One of the paramitas. What about patience? Can I be a little more patient in this situation? How come I'm not being more patient in this situation? So during the day, you're constantly turning those questions and you're bringing yourself back to present, back to my breath, back to the present moment, back to what Dogen says, this moment is all I need. This moment is all I need. Even meditation practice, which seems to take time, you ordinarily would be filling with some other activity, actually takes less time when you realize how much time you save when your mind is a bit calmer and more focused. And when your day begins with processing and settling your life rather than rushing headlong into today, with yesterday as yet undigested. Practice is the light of this point in not doing something we are doing over and above our life. It is our life. It is the way we live. In Zen, traditional training expresses and extends this point. This is kind of interesting. I'm actually giving a talk right now on something that this section is not the section I picked out. I'm doing pretty good, aren't I, for a section. I thought, when am I going to get to the section I really want to talk about? So let's see. But maybe I should just continue, right? Or maybe I should just ad lib it. Okay, let's see if I don't know where the heck this. I thought it was in this section. Anyway, I'm going to tell you what Norman says. What Norman says is when he sits. This is what I wanted to read to you because when he sits, what he says is that's exactly what his mind does. It's just sometimes all over the place, and you think, well, here's a guy that's been sitting. He was abbot at Zen Center. He's actually put more time into the cushion than I have. He's done a lot more 7-day retreats than I have. I have a deep respect for his practice. And it's not like when he sits, his mind is just clear and radiant and thought-free. He actually says in here, he gives full disclosure. He says, no, actually my mind, sometimes I just feel like I'm swimming around in it. And he says, I'm just enjoying that process. I don't have some driven idea, as Dogen would encourage us to pursue in our meditation practice, that our mind has to be clear. I'm just enjoying the process of sitting. Oh, my mind is busy today. It's just what it is in this moment. It's not like he's trying to follow after it. It's not like he's trying to think, but he's not fighting it. It's not some kind of struggle. So he's bringing himself back, but What he said in this particular section was just that, the process of just being present with what is, what his mind is. So, this person's card, I hope they didn't give up. I hope they just accepted that as part of the process of meditation. So, that was the practical part that I wanted to do. So, I'd like to get back to time being. So, again, what Dogen's trying to do is trying to get us to think about time in a different way. I was thinking Dogen is probably, Uji, which is time being, is probably to time what maybe quantum mechanics is to physics, I thought, in some way. That used to be that people would think, well, this is just what it is. It's something solid and it's made out of brass. And then people begin to look a little more deeply and they found out that there was actually molecules in here and atoms and protons and neutrons. And then they begin to look a little more deeply in that. They had that, thought they had that figured out. And then Einstein began to figure out that these things called protons and neutrons had a kind of life of their own. And they just didn't seem to follow any kind of predictable pattern. So he thought maybe he'd try to figure out some rules that govern how neutrons and protons activated. And then he found out that it was pretty difficult to do that. So what they've done now is they've designed a computer, which instead of being more linear, just based on 0 and 1, is what they've called kind of the quantum mechanics of the new computer. And you can pick up one of these computers for about $10 million, if you're interested. And basically what this computer does, instead of just processing information on 0 or 1, it can process information on 0 and 1, and both 0 and 1. So when I heard that, which just the possibility, so you're running multiple simultaneous computations at the same time, and it just takes computing just to a stratospheric level in terms of what the potential is. So I thought, well, that reminded me a lot of what the Heart Sutra is trying to do back in the 2nd century, you know, BC. It's saying, well, we have this thing called form. We get that. And then spirituality comes in and it starts to give you some idea of emptiness. So we can kind of compute things on, usually on form, on the basis of form. Then we can begin slowly to compute things on the basis of emptiness. But can we compute things on the basis of form and emptiness and both form and emptiness? The potential of how we begin to lead our lives and experience the universe is greatly expanded. So this is what Dogen in some ways is doing with time here. They found out that in the various quantum systems, things can exist in certain quantum systems can exist in two places simultaneously. In two places simultaneously. So there's lots of rules that are pretty extraordinary in quantum mechanics. And so this is, in some ways, Dogen in the 13th century is trying to get us to do this with time. He's beginning to try to get us to see time in a very different way. So let's pick up. So this is section 6. Now when I read this, you're not going to understand it. Just kind of think of it as like a Ezra Pound poem, right? And then we'll get into it a little bit. The 3 heads and 8 arms may be yesterday's time. The 8 and 16 foot body may be today's time. In other words, you may be something yesterday and you're something else today. Maybe you were deluded yesterday and today you think you're the Buddha. Yet yesterday and today are both in the moment when you directly enter the mountains and see thousands of myriad peaks. Yesterday's time and today's time do not go away. 3 heads and 8 arms, yesterday's time, move forward as your time being. It looks as if they are far away, but they are here and now. Yesterday's time is here and now. The 8 or 16 foot body moves forward as your time being. It looks as if it is nearby, but it is exactly here. Thus, the alpine tree is time, the bamboo is time. Maybe the bamboo and the alpine tree are maybe not so different than us. In section 7, do not think that time merely flies away. Do not see flying away as the only function of time, which is usually what we do. Right? Time just passes and it's gone. If time merely flies away, you would be separated from time. There'd be some gap between you and time. The reason you do not clearly understand the time being is that you think of time only as passing. In essence, all things in the entire world are linked with one another as moments. So there's a key phrase right there again. He brings us back to the central point. In essence, all things in the entire world are linked with one another as moments. Everything in the world experiences a moment, a time being. And all moments of time being are present in this now. Those are my words. Because all moments are the time being, they are your time being. So what he's basically saying again is right here. All moments are right here. So can you begin to enjoy right here? And it's very hard for us to do that. That's why we're so frantically running around searching for stimulus and various things to do. And that's why the essence of our practice is to just try to sit on our cushion right here and experience time being right now. And just notice everything that tries to pull us away from this. And if we sit long enough, we begin to settle, really have an experiential experience that everything is present right here, that we actually don't need anything more than the present moment. Now, if you really came to that realization, that would be, I think, a good definition of what enlightenment is, or nirvana. The definition of nirvana, even traditionally in the Theravada tradition, is the extinguishment of the kleshas, the extinguishment of the passions, the extinguishment of those things that drive us here and there, towards or away from. So if you can sit and really have an experience that everything is present right now, everything you need is right now, you can relax. You can have peace right now. This moment contains everything that you need. And last week I gave you Cleary's quote. He says, clarifying and sharpening relative understanding while at the same time being aware of the ultimate inconceivability of existence in itself is a Zen art. So we sit and we go about our lives and we try to figure our lives out and do what we can to navigate, to try to figure out our own navigation instructions in our relationships and our work. But also, it's informed by this mystery of life, that we can sit and also see that everything is complete, just as it is. So what Dogen is saying in the section that I just read was that you think time is in the past. And one of the main problems in spiritual practice is that we actually, there's a part of us that doesn't like our life very much. We think if we can just spiff ourselves up, we can sit meditation long enough, we're going to spiff ourselves up. We're going to put the past behind us and we're going to be a new spiffy person, right? And that's one reason why sometimes people put robes on and you know, what various spiritual accoutrements, is to try to make themselves feel that they're taking a new life. And in some ways, in Jukai, we kind of honor that presence. We're taking a new name. We're leaving the old life behind of like greed, hate, and delusion, and we're recommitting ourselves. But there's a trap in that. And the trap is that we can fall into spiritual arrogance. So that's one reason in our tradition, in Zen tradition, when people have spiritual experiences, enlightening experiences, we tend to downplay it a little bit. Oh, you've had this enlightening experience, you're now an enlightened person. In our tradition, which I deeply appreciate and value and didn't really understand for many years, is that can be a trap. Not that those don't happen. Not that there isn't some progression. But there's a trap. And that's what Dogen's trying to say here. He's trying to say, even though you think the past is in the past, actually, it's in. It's right here. It's right now. So you should have some humility. You should have some humility about your life. You should question your life a little bit. So on one hand, this is not good news, maybe, but in some ways, it's tremendously hopeful news. So let me see if I can explain both of those. And this particular section touches me deeply because it's so profoundly psychological. It cuts so much. Let me just ask somebody right now. Is anybody here a therapist? Marriage family therapist? Anybody a marriage family therapist? The reason I'm asking is because I'm actually a certified provider for continuing education credits, and I can give you a credit for today's lecture. All you got to do is sign up, but you're not here, so I'm sorry. And that wouldn't be why you're here anyway, right? To get credit, right? That would, Shogun wouldn't approve of that. The very point I'm making, right? But on the other hand, you gotta do work, so you need these credits, right? So you have to work with both. Okay, let me get back on track here. So what Dogen is saying is, the part that's a little discouraging is like, I just want to put my past behind me. I had a difficult childhood. My mother and father really weren't there for me. I'm going to do a lot of spiritual practice. I'm going to put that behind me. All right? Dogen's saying, yes and no. In this thing, he's saying, just be careful in spiritual practice that you think you're going to put all these things behind you. Actually, you need all those things because all those moments are not past. They're in the time being right now. So what did I do yesterday? I was enjoying the rain and I thought, well, this is a good opportunity for me to sit down and do my continuing education credits for being a therapist. I have to do 36 hours every couple of years. Yeah, Richard knows he has to do it for law, right? When I used to have to do it for law and therapist, it was a bit much, so I eliminated the law. So yesterday I sat down and spent 3 hours in the rain listening to a lecture on taming the narcissistic personality, which I thought was totally wonderful because narcissism in some ways is kind of an indication on a continuum of where we're all at, right? We all tend to be a little self-centered, right? That's on the normal range of narcissism. If you go out to the extreme, and when you have a narcissistic personality disorder, it's like you are the universe, right? Everyone else is secondary to you. It's an extremely, it's a big example of where you don't want to be as a practitioner, right? But we're all on that continuum to some degree, right? So I'm interested in this topic. And I was thinking as I was listening to this, just how much Dogen would appreciate how this particular therapist was working with narcissistic personality disorder, because what happens in a narcissistic personality is because I have certain of those, some of those tendencies, because I have a childhood a lot like what's indicated, as are many people that come to practice. they have a childhood where they their needs weren't met. You know, what was met was performance. They got recognition for performance. Their material needs were met. But the way they got recognition from their parents was mostly through performance. Their emotional needs weren't met. They would go and say, I'm not feeling particularly good. I wish Dad was home a little more than he needed to be, or I wish he was home a little more. And the mother would say something like, you know, well, you think you got a problem. Don't you think I miss your dad too? Don't you think I... So immediately you got to end up taking care of mother, right? Instead of recognizing that. So what happens is, as a result of that, people begin to discount their feelings. Nobody was going to validate their feelings as a kid, so they had to discount that. Discount their feelings. The only thing that worked was performance. They had to be extraordinary. They had to be exceptional, and they had to perform really well. And that's why a lot of narcissistic people are pretty successful in the world. They're just not very successful in terms of long-term relationships. Even short-term, they can be pretty good because they can be very charming. They can be extremely charming because they have learned to get what they need, how to manipulate people to their charm. So the treatment for narcissistic personality is to do exactly what Dogen is saying here, is that you've got to go back. Which is exactly what the narcissistic personality doesn't want to do. They do not want to go back, as most of us don't, and re-experience painful situations, to go back and really be with, in some ways be humbled by, and be kind of marinated by their feelings. They don't want to do that. So narcissistic personalities tend to not, they're the people that do not stay in therapy. They do not want to come to therapy. They tremendously resist it because they think they're right, and they don't want anybody taking them back to show them their vulnerability. So what you've got to do is you've got to form a bond with them. You've got to know that you really love and appreciate them as a therapist, and then you very slowly have to take them back and get them to see and begin to experience some emotions, some sadness, some things that they can't experience right now. And because they can't experience in their life right now, they can't experience it with other people. They discount everybody else's feeling. And that creates no end of problem for them. So this is what Dogen is saying. He's saying, you may think, so the bad news is, for the narcissist is, I can't just wipe this out. I can't just be over it. But the good news is even though the time being in the past is your current, it is in your current time being, you get to work with it. You get to hold it in a different way. You get to frame it in a different way. And that's where maturity happens. That's where wisdom happens. So, this is extremely hopeful news. Actually, rather than spiritual practice as a way to get beyond something, it's a way to work with your life. So it becomes less, your practice and your meditation becomes less of getting to some other place. It becomes a way of working with your life. Whatever your life presents in all its difficult and hardship and pain, it just gets you to be more appreciative of everything that you're with. So, very hopeful. So let's do a little exercise from that, okay? So take a couple breaths. Now this may work, there's a couple different ways I could have taken you on this. But this is the way I'm going to do it, and hopefully it works for most of you. So now just think of a time. It may have been yesterday. It may have been a week ago. Think of a time when you got triggered, when you got something upset you. Maybe it was the way your partner talked to you. Maybe it was a reaction to your kid. And of course there was something wrong, There's no question that there was something off. But it triggered you. You got upset about it. You got angry. You got irritated. Maybe you lashed out, or maybe you just withdrew. Two different strategies. And just think about what that was, what it was. And instead of going into what the other person did wrong, which is where we normally go, and which people in a narcissistic tendency tend to do, they tend to want to not internalize, but they want to blame, they want to project the blame outward, so they don't feel it, so they can't feel it. Just take it in and feel it. Just feel, you know, your irritation, your anger a little bit, and then ask yourself, what's familiar about this? What is it in your past that could have contributed to this? Take the heat off what the other person out there did wrong, and they did do something wrong, most likely. But what is it that charged this up for you in your past? Maybe reflecting back when you were frustrated as a child. When you were frustrated as a child, what was your strategy when you got frustrated? Did you get angry? Did you have to fight for your position in the world? Did you withdraw? Was that your strategy? Just to accommodate? What was your strategy? And maybe, there's a link between your old strategy and your old way of relating to how you're currently relating to a similar situation. That trigger reminds you of something that triggered you in the past. So this is the kind of work that I do with clients all the time, is trying to get them to feel the emotional connection currently with some emotional connection in the past. So just take 2 minutes now and do that. Go back and forth. Maybe visualizing something in the present and then something in the past. See what comes up for you. Or just pick somebody that normally you're not with. And again, the way we do the exercise is, if you don't want to say anything, first of all, if you don't want to do the exercise, that's fine. If you don't want to say anything, just don't say anything. Or if you want to say two or three sentences. But the first person will have 4 minutes, and then the second person will have 4 minutes. And then we'll get back together. So just pick one other person and just say what came up for you. If anything came up. Just one other person.